Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform for the 92nd State Legislative Session will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt. Representative Hewitt. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, present.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Shung.
Present.
And that concludes roll call.
Representative Hewitt is present. Representative Hewitt is present. Very well, we do have a quorum. Members, this hearing is conducted under Minnesota House Rule 10.01, allowing for hearings to be held via use of distance voting, remote electronic voting, or voting by other means to protect the health and safety of the public, staff, and members. You can view House Rule 10.01 on the Minnesota House website. This hearing is live streamed also on the House website and can be accessed via the committee page. Those wishing to offer public testimony can conduct send an email to the committee administrator, Mr. Jamal Lundy, 24 hours prior to a hearing. And the address is also available on our committee page. members, today's theme for today, the focus of our bills is on first responder issues. And so this is our first responder day for this committee hearing. However, before we get going, I do need a motion for adoption of the February 17th minutes. So I'm wondering if I can pick on Representative Pinto to make that motion.
You can, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Chair Pinto moves adoption of the February 17th minutes. Any discussion? Let me get my hands. This is always a good exercise for me to make sure that I have everything prepared here very well. Representative Johnson, a voice vote, I assume, is fine here.
That would be fine.
Very well. All in favor of the Pinto motion to adopt the minutes of February 17th, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of February 17th are hereby adopted. Thank you, Representative Pinto. As I mentioned, today's focus will be on first responder issues. Many of you know that, or all of you know, that our Public Safety Criminal Justice Reform Committee has a broad swath of very important work that we oversee and that we provide policy and resources for. And one of the most critical areas that we do that for is the broad domain itself of first responder realities and issues in our state. Members, I also want to give you a heads up before I forget that the chair is looking at an evening hearing next week, March 8th. I know it's going to be like brand new news to probably 90% of you. I was just going through our agenda last night with our committee administrator. We've got a pretty full deck that's shaped up for us. And my hope is that an evening meeting next week will help us keep pace with the bills that have been introduced. You have my commitment not to make a habit of those. My goal over the last 3 years has been to the extent that we need evening hearings, we do those early in the session get the work done as quickly as possible and then reserve the latter part of the session for the ability of members to accommodate the then pressing responsibilities they have in other committees. I'll be providing more details about that to all members soon. We have four bills before us, and so my hope is that we can move rather expeditiously today. Okay, what I'm told is that my evening hearing is 2 weeks, not next week, so that would make it March 8th. Sorry about that. Give you a little bit more time to think about it. All right. Members, our first bill is House File 2746 by Representative Joaquin. And I'm wondering if Representative Frazier would be so kind as to move to refer House File 2746 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Representative Joaquin, your bill is before us. The motion is referred to Committee on Ways and Means. This is the hometown, this is related to the Hometown Heroes Act, something that I think this committee is pretty proud of, having worked on behalf of our firefighters across the state, most of who are volunteer public servants for Minnesota and who face some very unique issues that Hometown Heroes, in regards to their health and safety, that Hometown Heroes looks to provide help with. So perhaps just a very quick description of Hometown Heroes. Tell us about your bill, and then you have a testifier as well. Representative Joaquin, Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, committee members. Thank you for hearing House File 2746, a bill that would make a few clarifications on the Hometown Heroes Assistance Program. I would also like to thank members of this committee for hearing the Hometown Heroes bill last session. Your action set the Minnesota Firefighters Initiative on its path into passage. It was a bill that had bipartisan support that provided MnFire with the funds to aid firefighters across the state with training around cardiac care, provide mental health supports, and monetary support for our firefighters who have been diagnosed with cancer or heart disease. As with many bills that we pass, there's always need to have a few tweaks. We need to make a few clarifications around the program start date, a definition, and who is administrating the grant at the state level. The cap that MnFire has to administrate the program does not change with this bill. I've also seen the fiscal note from the Senate, and the state fire marshal has said that they will be able to absorb the cost of administering the program. So with that, I briefly have Wayne Kiewicz, the executive director of MnFire Initiative, here to provide very brief testimony and answer any questions, as well as George Espenson, the president of MnFire Initiative, is on the call if folks have further questions. Thank you.
Very well, thank you, Chair Joaquin. And so, Mr. Kiewicz, if you can come forward, state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Wayne Kiewicz. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Firefighter Initiative, more commonly known as MnFire. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. First and foremost, I would like to thank each of you for your support last year in the passage of the Hometown Heroes Assistance Program. All components of the program are up, running, and assisting all Minnesota firefighters across the state. Training is being conducted statewide in all areas of firefighter health and well-being, giving our firefighters the skills to help minimize the health risks that are inherent in firefighting. The MnFire Assistance Program, or MAP, which is the statewide equivalent of an employee assistance program, is fielding calls from firefighters and their families across the state, assisting them when they ask for help. The Critical Illness Insurance Program is processing claims from across the state, with the majority of the claims at this time coming from Greater Minnesota. The first claim paid was to the family of a firefighter from a small rural town on the western border of Minnesota who lost his battle with cancer. The Hometown Heroes program is making a difference statewide, and that is due to your support. Thank you. I would like to thank Chair Mariani for including it in last session's public safety omnibus bill, and I would particularly like to thank our chief house authors, Representatives Joaquin and Representative Tice, for their efforts. I am here today to ask your support for House File 2746, which is a straightforward corrections bill to the original Hometown Heroes statute. The bill accomplishes two things. First, it clarifies the eligibility date for the critical illness insurance policy to be the effective date of the statute. Second, it moves the funding and oversight from the Office of Justice Programs to the office, to the Minnesota Board of Firefighter Training and Education within the State Fire Marshal's Office. MinFire has had a long, positive, and successful relationship with the Fire Marshal's Office. All parties affected by this move have been consulted. Each agree to and support the move. The parties supporting this move are Office of Justice Programs, Minnesota Board of Firefighter Training and Education, State Fire Marshal's Office, the Department of Public Safety, and the Department of Commerce. Once again, thank you for your support of the Minnesota Fire Service and firefighter health.
Thank you, Mr. Kiewicz, for your testimony. And excuse me, I do want to do a shout out to Mr. Espenson. Last time we met, sir, you were driving across some whiteout conditions across northern Minnesota. So hopefully you remain safe as you continue your travels during our winter months here in Minnesota. Members, I'll open this up to questions from members. And, you know, let me just say that I Representative Chair Joachim, you've got, I think, a bill that really ought to enjoy everybody's support here. You know, I was really proud of our House being bipartisan in that respect last year. And I think these two technical fixes, you know, will greatly strengthen our ability to fulfill the legislative intent. But it's important that we understand, you know, technically what we're doing here. So let me start with Representative O'Neill. Okay. And Representative O'Neill, you're muted, I'm afraid.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm having trouble with my audio today, so please stop me if it cuts out again.
You'll want to be closer to that mic, I think, because you're pretty low on my end anyway.
Is that any better?
Oh, yeah, much better.
Okay. Sorry, it's been tricky today. Yes, I had a conversation with Representative Joachim about a couple concerns I had as we're making these changes. And she was more than willing to make some adjustments. The first one was simply on line 2.22, when you're using the word critical illness as defined by the Minnesota Firefighters Initiative, as it, instead of having to...
Representative O'Neill, your sound went down again. I apologize. Right after you mentioned line 2.2.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, barely.
How about if I have Joachim speak?
Very well. Chair Joachim.
Mr. Chair, so Representative O'Neill and I chatted a little bit ago. She had some concerns on line 2.23 around the change to critical illness from heart disease and diagnosis of cancer and heart disease. And I am more than willing to work with her on that. I just need to touch base with MinFire Initiative and see how they want to further clarify that. And then I believe also one of the other concerns was whether or not the cap for the administrative costs changed with this bill, and it doesn't. And I see that you're sending it to Ways and Means, and I'm you'll be able to see the same fiscal note I'm seeing from the Senate that says the State Fire Marshal will absorb the administrative costs. Very and well, I think I covered what we talked about.
Okay. I see a thumbs up, and perhaps for further, you know, Representative O'Neill's comfort, I wonder if Mr. Kiewicz, you know, as ED of the Minnesota Fire, would care to comment, or perhaps they haven't even had a chance to think yet about that change in critical illness definition, but anything you can offer here would be helpful.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, the purpose of keeping it defined by the Minnesota Firefighter Initiative is that we have purchased a critical illness insurance policy off the general market, off the open market. And we were unable to find one that just covered cancer and cardiac. So what we have with this product is a product that actually covers more issues and illnesses that the firefighters may be subjected to, loss of a limb, loss of hearing, things like that. And one of the nice things about having a little bit of flexibility with that is the market defines a lot of the coverages. With COVID, for example, this policy does cover firefighters if they've had at least a five-day hospital stay. for COVID. If we were to define things strictly by statute, we would have had to come back to the legislature and get it get that included. We would not have been able to offer that at the same cost to the fire service.
That's very helpful background. Representative O'Neill, I'm going to make another stab here. I just want to make sure that you're feeling comfortable moving forward at this point, even though this still will make a stop at Ways and Means.
Hear me now.
A little bit, but go for it.
I will try. So my concern is that that should match statute, even though you're referencing something in the private marketplace. We still need a statutory definition so that it's contained and not so broad. I think legislators are going to probably be more comfortable having the legislature define what critical illness means as opposed to the private market insurance. So that's the disconnect. And I'm sure that Representative Joachim and Senator Howe can work out an appropriate definition that we can reference here.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. And that was loud and clear. I think it's actually very good advice. Chair Joachim, it sounds like perhaps a little bit more work, assuming this bill moves forward. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Joachim, I want to thank you for this bill. We need to do all we can for our first responders, especially our firefighters. As a former firefighter, I understand that. Things they go through as well, and the chemicals and everything that they deal with in these fires, whether it's a chemical fire or just a regular house fire, the chemicals in them are outrageous. My concern again deals with the cost of administering this program. I know that the department, the State Department said that they had absorbed the cost. It's no issue. It's just a pass through to another organization. And I do believe it's statutorily, we should put something in there, the maximum amount that they can use for running this program. We've seen more and more that we've had, and who's putting it, they do great work, but I think we need to put a cap on it, a certain percentage, for the simple reason. Otherwise, we've had organizations that have abused it, and I don't want that to happen. I don't believe this organization would, but if we don't put in statute, we leave it open so something could be abused.
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have the fiscal note in front of me from the Senate that talks about the administrative costs that are already in statute, and it has a dollar amount that's capped. So I sometimes think that's even better than a percentage, but we can talk about this offline and figure out if you need some more comfort language. But that can be discussed in Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Rowley, and then we'll move to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. And to the author, I'm going to echo exactly what everybody else is saying. You know, supporting our firefighters is critical to public safety. And I did have a question on a clarification. This is in subdivision 3, page 2. It starts at 2.15 is the relevant area. It says that payments of up to $20,000 to each eligible firefighter. And then below that, it says, for each eligible diagnosis. And I'm wondering, does the first one exclude the second? Or if a firefighter is eligible for up to 20,000, but they've got, in this example, let's say three diagnoses, heart disease, cancer, and something else to be determined later. Could you talk to me how those two items work with each other? Do the benefits stack? Or is it capped on line 2.17 at 20,000, Mr. Chair?
Good question, Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Raleigh. I think I'll either toss this over to Wayne Kiewicz, or actually maybe nonpartisan staff can explain how the language is written with the amendment, whichever you prefer.
Yeah, why don't we begin with Mr. Kiewicz in terms of, you know, intent, perhaps, and how they're approaching administration, and then we can turn to call staff to make sure that technically our language is aligned with that. Mr. Kiewicz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, this language was actually suggested by our vendor, Securian Financial, who's located in St. Paul. They wanted to make sure it worked. The language in the statute aligned with the policy that we have purchased from them. So what it does stack to give you, to let you know, but you have to be an active firefighter. So for example, let's say I have a heart attack as a firefighter on January 1, I would be eligible for a benefit. 2 months later, I get diagnosed with colon cancer. I would be eligible for another benefit. But there is a exclusionary period for the same condition. Does that answer your question?
Representative Raleigh.
Mr. Chair, what I heard was it's $20,000 per incident and it is stackable. So I believe that answers the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kiewicz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, it's actually a sliding scale benefit. So it's not every condition is paid out at $20,000.
Yeah,
it depends on the severity, up to, correct.
Very well. Members, I don't see any other questions. And so Representative Joachim, take us out to a vote, then we'll take the vote.
As always, members, thank you for your time and attention. I'll continue to work on this bill as it hits Ways and Means, and I appreciate your support.
Very well. The clerk will Representative Frazier renews his motion that House File 2746 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani. Aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier. Aye. Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Johnson. Aye. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson. Aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero?
Lucero, yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Shung? Representative Shung? And that concludes roll call with 18 ayes and one absent.
Very well. With 18 ayes and one absent and no nays, the motion does prevail and House File 2746 is referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Chair Joachim and Mr. Kiewicz and Mr. Espenson as well. Next, we have members House File 499, Representative Marquardt and Representative Frazier. I'm going to avail myself of you again, sir, if you would be so kind as to move House File 499 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. We will move at the end of this conversation to lay this bill over for possible inclusion. Representative Frazier?
So moved, Chair.
Very well. The motion is before us. The bill is before us. Representative Marquardt, welcome back to the committee. We had this conversation last year. We embraced it, your bill, enthusiastically. We couldn't quite get it over across the line in our interactions with the Senate, but there certainly is an interest and, more importantly, a need. And so it certainly is the hope of this chair that we can put this back in play and see if we can get it across the finish line. But Representative Marquardt, if you can tell us about your bill, we'd appreciate it. And you might be muted if you're here. You know what? I don't see Representative Marquardt on the list here. I also know he is in the eye of a pretty big storm, and I suspect he is probably up north. Let's see. Do we have any of the testifiers with us here? I have unlisted a Kyle Oldry and David Borger. I hear a voice.
Commissioner Borger, would you like to go first?
Yes, thank you. My name is, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is David Borkert. I serve as a Brown County Commissioner. I know well the fiscal pressures local governments are under, particularly those outside the metropolitan area. In many of our communities across the state, emergency managers lack adequate funding, staffing, and other resources. In an interview at the end of 2017, FEMA Administrator Brock Long issued a warning. I quote, "It's a wake-up call for this country, for local and state elected officials to give their governors and their emergency management directors the full budgets they need to be fully staffed, to design rainy day funds. What we need are for elected officials at all levels of government to hit the reset button, sit down, evaluate where their programs are within their state emergency management directors, as well with their local emergency management directors, and make sure that they have everything they need to increase their levels of self-sufficiency." He continued with, "Localities must be more prepared to shoulder the crises," end of quote. We know well that the jurisdictions are not equally prepared across the state, and the lack of equity is a disservice to our citizens. In fact, we struggle to hold our programs together while there are significant delays in receiving our federal EMPG grants, leaving communities encumbering local resources for a year or more into their budgets before receipt of the federal funds. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we thank the governor for including local emergency management funds in his supplemental budget. We thank you for the past support and ask again that you appropriate ongoing critically needed state resources to complement our local and federal funding. Thank you.
Very well, thank you, Commissioner. And hopefully you can stick around for questions if there are any. And members, I am told that Representative Marquardt is on his way virtually here. He's apparently doing pretty important work, like chairing our House Tax Committee.
I am here now, Mr. Chair.
Oh, there he is. You abandoned taxes for this
this
important bill. It just shows how darn important it is. Welcome, Chair Marquardt. It's good to see you, my friend. We just started. I had to bend Representative Frazier's iron to make the motion for you, but you know, I prevailed. So the bill is before us, and we just heard from Commissioner Borkert, and I know that Kyle, Mr. Oldry, is also here, but we have not yet heard from him. But you know, it's your bill, so you tell us what you need to tell us right now, and then we'll just keep pushing.
So, thank you, Representative Frazier, for moving the bill, and thank you, Chair Mariani, for hearing this and accommodating my schedule. Has the A1 amendment been put on yet?
It is not, sir.
Okay, would someone please move that, and then we could then put the bill in the form I would like.
Very, very well. I'm wondering if Vice Chair Frazier would move the A1 amendment.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. The A1 amendment is before us. Representative Marquardt, or Chair Marquardt, to your amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Frazier, for moving that. So it makes the $3 million ongoing, and then it changes the date by a year, because we're kind of now another year, on when the Commissioner of Public Safety has to put together the report on how these dollars were used and so forth. So that's what that amendment does.
Very well. Basically puts this bill in the shape the author wishes it to be, and to make it a workable bill. Representative Johnson, I'm thinking a voice vote should suffice here.
Voice vote would be fine.
Very well. All in favor of the, well, any discussion, I should ask. I'm sorry. Okay. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And Chair Marquardt, House File 499 is amended with the A1 amendment to your bill.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and members. I first of all want to thank this committee and you, Mr. Chair, for putting this into the House Omnibus Bill last year. This is the third or fourth time I've been before this committee, and I know this committee is very supportive of this bill, so I'll keep this short. So what this would provide is $3 million of grants to emergency management departments, and it would be equally distributed, this $3 million, out to our 87 counties, our 11 federally recognized tribes, and the four cities of the first class. It comes out to about $29,400 per entity. And the reason is that there are no state funds currently going into emergency management. And Minnesota Statute 12.25 requires counties to have emergency managers and to conduct this. And it's to prepare, it's to respond, it's to deal with all sorts of disasters, floods, tornadoes, pandemics, whatever you might have. And so the only way they're funded right now is through the federal government, which can be uncertain, or through property taxes. And the thing we know, and especially for small counties, is that a disaster doesn't have a disaster based on the resources you have or the population you have. In fact, one example, and you might have had this in your materials today or at another time, but you've got Norman County, Renville County, and Kitson County, for example, that between them in the last 7 years have had 18 disasters, and those 18 declared disasters in those three counties, and the total population of those three counties is about 25,000. So you're dealing with all these very limited dollars. So there's a lot of important work that has to be done, and I know I'm preaching to the choir because you guys have, the committee has supported this, and so it's asking for $3 million that would be put ongoing grants that these counties would have and other entities would have to apply to, and then there would be a report due by 2024 by the Commissioner of Public Safety. So I know there's one more testifier, that Mr. Oldry from Rock County, and he's the emergency manager there.
Very well. Let's call on Mr. Oldry at this point to come forward, state your name for the record, sir, and give us your testimony.
My name is Kyle Oldry. I'm the county administrator and emergency management director for Rock County since 1993. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think I was in front of you last year, and I'd like to echo Representative Marquardt words about how much we appreciate your support. Emergency management kind of flies under the radar until we're needed. And when we're needed, we're really needed. And as Representative Marquardt stated, there's been a number of disasters in counties, certainly in cities of the first class over the last decades and years, and it doesn't lessen in severity or the requirement. I think the one thing that is often overlooked in emergency management is our relationship, not only with the state. Certainly the state is a huge partner for us and a needed partner, but also what we do as local emergency managements for other cities and for townships. We end up being the catch-all emergency management resource for all other governments within our county. So we serve as the EM for our townships and our small cities. Certainly you get to larger cities, say 10, 15,000 and larger, in many cases they handle it themselves, but you get to smaller cities like I have in Rock County. My total county population is about 9,500. So the smaller cities within Rock County certainly rely on us as EMs. And again, to echo Representative Marquardt, the federal funding, which is matched locally, in a case for Rock County in 2010, we received $17,900 from the federal government, required match locally. And in 2019, we received $17,700. So in 10 years time, the federal contribution actually shrank by $200. With the need continuing to grow, I don't want to beat on this too long because you've been an incredibly supportive group and you well understand what emergency management does. But I, I think it's also important to recognize our partners in this request, and that's the Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers, Minnesota Rural Counties Association, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Inter-County Association, as well as the tribal governments. It has universal support on local units of government and its entities, and the need is clearly there to bolster the preparedness piece, the mitigation piece of all those things for emergency management going forward. I greatly appreciate your time, Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, your continued support, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Aldridge, and we appreciate your work in this area. I recall from last year's testimony that while the numbers may not seem big, Representative Marquardt talked about 29,400. You just shared how, I think it was Rock County, 17,000 from the feds. The point, what I remember from last year was you put those two together, and now you can do, some decent, not great, but decent, support for moving you into a full-time position or someone that can spend much more time, whereas right now you've got individuals who are, providing this kind of coordination along with a portfolio of other responsibilities as well.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. I'm a good example. I allocate roughly a third of my time to emergency management, two-thirds to other duties. With this funding, the county is looking to change that and have the priority with the emergency management and look towards a full-time. And I think you'll see that in many counties my size, where we would bolster up the entirety of the program, and you'd see more time allocated to preparedness, mitigation, and those functions.
Very well. Thank you, sir. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Marquardt, thank you for bringing this forward. I spoke on this last year. Unfortunately, it didn't. It got lost in conference committee. Hopefully, we can get this through. As a former emergency manager for a small city I worked for as a police officer, at a budget of less than $1,000. It's hard to do anything, let alone even get a storm siren going with $1,000. This is important, especially to the small communities and small counties across the state. And I'm hoping that we can get this over the top this year because it is that important. And just so you're aware, I did send a email to be a co-author on this bill, and I want to thank you for bringing it forward.
Fantastic. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Chair Marquardt, we're going to move to lay this over, and hope that we can have the extra, strengthen our legs to get it across the finish line a little bit later in the year. But please close us out with your thoughts and encouragement on your bill.
Mr. Chair and committee, you understand this. And on behalf of all the emergency managers around the state, just a huge thank you for putting this in the bill last year and for your support. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Frazier, the chair will lay House File 2867 as, the right bill?
House File 499.
Yes, indeed. Okay, the chair will lay House File 499 as amended over for possible inclusion in this committee's omnibus bill. Thank you again to all the testifiers and to you.
Thank you,
Chairman Marquardt. All right, very well, members. We now have Representative Huot's House File 2867. The motion would be to refer to Ways and Means, and we will be laying this over as well. Representative Huot moves House File 2867 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Huot, your bill is before us, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. Committee members and Mr. Chair, this is an extremely sad day that I have to come before you and talk about body armor for EMTs, paramedics, and firefighters. In 1987, when I started my career, we were just barely starting to use gloves. Now today, I'm coming back to you and talking to you about using body armor, and it's terrible. This weekend alone, We had an Allina ambulance on Highway 100 at Golden Valley Road, 10 feet off its bumper, witness a drive-by shooting. Fortunately, they were there and got the patient to the hospital right away. But these are the situations that our ambulance and fire folks are in. In California alone, 2 weeks ago, a firefighter was killed by shot in the line of duty. It's not like it was in 87 for some reason. And as we change policing and have police focus more on bigger crimes, they are not going to be available at these scenes. I myself have bumped into many scenes 10 years ago when I was still on the rigs that guns were involved, that people were very combative. It's just not the same time, and our ambulances also aren't operating the same way. Ambulances don't sit in a garage anymore. They do what they call system status. They're on the move. So they're out in the communities, out in the neighborhood, sitting at a street corner. This leaves them very vulnerable. And the same with fire. So I have two testifiers with me today that can kind of go into the real-time, real data on this. I have Chief Cunningham from the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. I also have Deputy Chief Baker from St. Paul. If we could have them testify at this point, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Let's begin then, Representative Hewitt, with John Cunningham. If you can come forward, Chief, and give us your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and members for allowing me to testify this afternoon. My name is John Cunningham, and I serve as the president of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, as well as a member of the Minnesota Fire Association Coalition, which represents the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, which is the leaders of 700 plus fire departments in the state. The Minnesota Fire Department Association, which again represents 700 and more fire departments, the Fire Marshals Association of Minnesota, the Minnesota Chapter of Arson or International Association of Arson Investigators, which is a public and private partnership of cause and origin investigators. I also happen to be the current fire chief and emergency management director for the city of Brooklyn Park. Last year, we responded to over 8,200 calls for service, 73% of which were for medical emergencies where we work alongside of our EMS partners. Thank you to Representative Hewitt for authoring this House File 2867, and I'm here to speak in support of that legislation. I think as just said, our world has changed significantly. I never would have expected 23 years ago to be testifying on legislation such as this, but it is very important to not only our department, but first responders across the entire state when we talk about ballistic protection for first responders. Today, we are responding to more and more calls that can and have turned violent. From a basic medical call where a patient or a family member becomes violent and turns on first responders, oftentimes without law enforcement present because the call did not indicate that there was a potential of any violence. Even locally, we've had cases of knives being pulled, guns being found, and a situation that really could have turned violent in a matter of seconds. And then we shift to the active violence and active shooter situations where firefighters and EMS personnel are entering a building shortly behind our law enforcement partners to try and provide life-saving treatment to those that have just been injured. As a fire chief, I'm committed to ensuring that our members return home safe at the end of their shift or their call, as well as at the end of their career. To that end, in August 2020, Brooklyn Park took the extraordinary measure of providing every firefighter, including all of our part-time firefighters, with an individually fitted vest. They cost almost $1,000 each. While we may have been one of the first in the state and in the country to take this extraordinary step of providing every member their own vest, it is something that we should be made available to all first responders. You just never know when the situation is going to change. On behalf of firefighters across the great state of Minnesota, we asked the legislature to pass not only the policy of reimbursing firefighters and EMS for ballistic protection, but also to provide the necessary funding to ensure that our first responders are protected. So again, I thank for this bill coming forward that support all first responders, firefighters, EMS, or paramedics, and then alongside our law enforcement partners. And then thank you for the Public Safety Commission, our committee, for your support, and I can certainly help answer any questions. And thanks for having me today.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate you being with us today and your work. Appreciate your work as well.
Appreciate it.
Next we have, I believe, Jeremy Baker, Deputy Chief for St. Paul Fire. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony, sir.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Mariani, Representative Hood, and members. And thank you for your work on behalf of firefighters and public safety officers such as myself. I'm a 20-year firefighter with the City of St. Paul, where I serve as the deputy chief in charge of our training division. I'm also the president of the St. Paul Fire Foundation, whose mission is to provide and support initiatives that increase the health, wellness, and safety of the St. Paul Fire Department and its members. It's long been a goal of both the St. Paul Fire Department and the St. Paul Fire Foundation to provide ballistic vests to responding firefighters. Unfortunately, the world our responders operate in is uncertain and oftentimes dangerous, outside of our normal dangers, if you will. We consistently respond to events that are unknown in their degree of danger and place our responders in positions where they are less than safe. As with our brothers and sisters in law enforcement, we're frequently responding to welfare checks, domestic and behavioral issues, and other similar events. St. Paul Fire and most fire departments and EMS providers around the state have seen significant increases in our call volume. We're regularly responding to events involving weapons. We responded to just shy of 60,000 calls for service in 2021 in St. Paul alone, with approximately 83% of those being EMS calls. Our call volume continues to rise annually, as does the danger our responders and those across the state have as well. We appreciate your consideration for this bill. And as Chief Cunningham stated, we would love to have all of our responders as safe as possible. And that is a huge goal that we have, and we appreciate your support in doing so.
Thank you, Deputy Chief. I spent a little bit of time with the Chief just last week, and we talked about this issue as well. And of course, since then, we've had the horrific gun violence over on the west side of my neighborhood. I suspect that some of your folks were there on the scene at some point. And
yes, sir. They were there within 5 minutes.
Yep. Yeah. My wife actually works right across the street. She's the one who called it, and you know, scary for us personally, but also, you know, just, you know, super cognizant of the rapid response on the part of your folks and our local police. That was absolutely comforting and needed. So thank you, sir, for your work.
Oh, thank you all.
We also have, I believe, Buck McAlpin, the Minnesota Ambulance Association. If you're here, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. Buck McAlpin. I represent the Minnesota Ambulance Association, and we've been working with our partners in the Fire Chiefs Association, as Chief Cunningham described, on this legislation. And really what we worked on in altering in the public safety soft body armor reimbursement was adding the definition of firefighters and ambulance personnel, first responder personnel that were certified under our statute and actively work on ambulance services. We thought that was a good start to be able to make it financially palatable to put this program in play. But the chief did a really good job describing this. And we really think it's an opportunity to get it out to what I would call some of our smaller rural ambulance services. I think, unfortunately, we see these situations just don't take place in our large metro communities. And folks have began to ask that of our association. And we think working with the chiefs, this is a great alternative to try to at least get some matching money as we look at trying to make sure this body armor is available for first responders across the state. So we appreciate the support and stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. McAlpin. Appreciate your work on this and being with us here today. Members, let's open this up for some discussion. We will be laying this over. And we still do have Representative Backer's bill. I want to make sure we get to with the remaining time. So with that, let's begin with Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this forward. Very important bill, and also important to remember that these vests will provide protection to some degree against sharp objects and blunt objects also. So when you're out on those traffic details, it might give you a little protection in case of contact with the vehicle. The only question I have for you, Representative Hewitt, is do we have enough money in this, or should we be adding an additional appropriation based on the number of eligible people that we'll be adding? I suspect with so many of the outstate rigs that are going to be coming into the cities, for example, up in the Elk River area, it's not uncommon for the rigs to be down in the cities 2-3 times a day. They would be in on this. So is this an appropriation we need to fix that way? Will there be enough in the funds? I don't think the numbers work out currently.
So trying to get our arms around, what the need and the scope and what it would require. Good question, Representative Hewitt.
Hi, and thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Devani, for the kind words. And I would never turn down money, but however, we got to figure out, like the Chair said, the scope and what we're looking at for numbers here. There's no way really to tell, because as you heard earlier, that some departments are providing them and some are not. And so we need to look into that to see what we can do here. But the Chair has committed to looking at this as the bill goes forward and looking at the amount that we're going to have to put in there. So right now we have, I think, a figure of 600 a vest. As you heard, that was not really cutting it yet. So we got some work to do yet, but I'm committed to doing that, and I hope you can help me on this.
Yeah, something I think we can all work together on. Representative Devani, you're good?
Oh, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Grassel.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess for the author, I have a couple questions, actually. Why is the author adding firefighters and EMTs to the eligible population for soft body armor grant reimbursement? What's led you to this for the author?
Representative Huon, I think that was part of the testimony offered by the testifiers, but I'll let you jump in quickly here.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Grassel, for the question. Realistically, it's a change in times. This hasn't been anything recent. This has been going on. Like I said, even back 10 years ago when I was still on the truck, I was running into gun situations. I was running into situations where I was punched, kicked, and knife pulled. And so this is nothing new. It's just that we're addressing it now. We should have, you're right, Representative Grassel, this should have been addressed probably about 10, 15 years ago. As you know, as a police officer, you know what we touch, right? So I appreciate the question. And it's just that now with things changing also, and there's no secret to that we want to focus our police officers on calls that they should be on. Maybe free them up on some of these mental health calls. Now more than ever, we need to look at this. So it has something to do with now, but this is a bill coming in late. Thank you.
Very well. Representative Russell, you had a second question, I think.
Yes, sir, I did. Yes, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And thank you, Representative Hewitt, for your answer there. And there's been a very, very big change in the past couple of years. There's been a whole lot of increase in the violent crime and such. So, to protect our emergency services personnel is of the highest priority. For the author again, and maybe one of the chiefs can answer this too. How many are there currently a lot of firefighters and EMTs wearing the soft body armor, or is do you have any kind of number on that?
Yeah, perhaps Chief Cunningham might have an idea about this.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the question. I think the numbers are small at this point. I think that's the exception and as opposed to the rule. Although I am fully aware that departments, as they can either find funding or find grants, that is the limiting factor on usually the decision to invest in body armor or any type of ballistic wear. Like I mentioned earlier, we actually did take that step forward to outfit every firefighter in our department, but I'm aware of, you know, a lot of agencies that let you wear them if you can buy them your own, and I think that's a significant limiting barrier. It really comes down to funding and providing the financial resources. I think, as was just stated, I think this is a long time coming. It probably should have been, you know, 10 years ago when we started these discussions, but I think for all the reasons that were mentioned, it's certainly increased to that. I don't know offhand what that number would look like. I think every community does their, you know, risk benefit analysis, but I'm aware of several departments that are actively pursuing trying to get vests into their personal protective equipment purchases, but it's the financial means to do so when there's other competing priorities makes that difficult.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, and thank you, Representative Russell.
Mr. Chair, could we ask a question for fiscal staff quickly?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Just what is the current status of this body armor fund?
This would be a question, Mr. Walls.
Mr. Chair, the current status of the body armor fund, it is paid through the transportation portion of the Department of Public Safety. So I'm not sure what the annual appropriation for this is, but I can try to look it up and get back to you.
Please, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think I got a pretty good idea what that fund is and where it's sitting at right now. I believe it's appropriated at $754,000, but at this current time, it's sitting right around the $40,000 mark left in there. So if we are going to be moving forward and wanting to equip and protect our first responders, we're going to have to find some money. You're going to have to find some money someplace, Mr. Chair, to help protect our officers, our firefighters, and our MTs.
That's very helpful, Representative Russell. Gives us a sense of the scope potentially that could be involved here. I think what we're hoping to demonstrate here is that there's good bipartisan support to be able to find those resources for this. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Russell. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good to see you, Chief Cunning. It's been, I don't know how long it's been, a couple of years, but anyway. And thank you, Representative Hewitt, and to all of the emergency personnel in all capacities that are so critically important to all of us across Minnesota, all of our communities. So I'm not in the field. I don't respond to calls. Obviously, I'm not a law enforcement or emergency personnel professional. But I've heard several of the testifiers allude to it, as well as Representative Hewitt, that certainly there's always a danger situation, and all emergency personnel and responding need to be aware of situational awareness. But then again, I've heard several say that something has changed, like there's an inflection point or something. So what is it that's changed in the environment, and what's driving the necessity of the bill? Again, I understand it's always been there, but I've heard several testifiers reference something's changed. What has changed?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you for your support, Representative Lucero, and thank you, Mr. Chair, again. Representative Lucero, this could go back to, we could tear this out and take all afternoon to dissect this out. Obviously, we've seen changes when the mental health hospital system changed in the state of Minnesota. We've seen changes when more guns were on the street. We've seen changes in just population growth. I mean, to put a finger on this and say this happened yesterday would be a false statement. This happened, this is like you heard the chief just testify, that this is something that's been in the making. We should have addressed this a while ago. And there's other reasons that they should wear body armor too. One of our companies said that they had a bad accident and protected the medic in back of the ambulance. There's a number of things here, but to say that, you know, that it happened yesterday that we're asking for this, that's not true. This is something that's been going on and we need to take care of it as we progress here. And God, you know what, Representative Lozero, I hope they don't ever need it. It's one of those things you hope you never need in your career. I'm sure of it. Not to be one that I wore it, but I, you know, when I ordered my first flight suit at LifeLink, I ordered Nomex and I paid like $600 for it. And they said, yeah, this is great. If you go down in a helicopter, this will protect you. And I kind of snickered there, but it's one of those things that you hope you never need. So I know that that's not a straight answer, but I can't give you one because this isn't the, I can't put the finger on this, okay? So thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative Huot. And I think with the proposition that you put before us is, regardless of what that means, that is, let's act. Let's provide some support for our local first responders. All right.
Just one quick follow-up then, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the Representative Huot. It's, so I am in support of this, but I do echo the concern about or what Representative Grossel brought up is the additional funding. If the account is now down to 40 and we're going to be essentially, I think I've seen the numbers, we're essentially going to double the amount of eligibility. It definitely is going to put a strain on existing resources. But I agree. I mean, as I look around, see the headlines, it appears to be a significant increase in the violent crime. And our brave professionals in these professions are definitely the first responders that need to be protected. So, yeah, absolutely. And you know, not now, but maybe in the future, it's a part of a conversation where, you know, we've seen the headlines of just recently the violent acts like the poor school bus driver that was attacked recently in Minneapolis. But again, there are other professions that are they're putting themselves at risk that we need to do everything we can to ensure the protection and safety of those around Minnesota. So thank you again, Mr. Chair, and I do support this.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. As we heard, there's a number of ideas about what's behind us, but I think the main message that Representative Huot has been laying before us and reinforced by our professionals here is that, you know, arguably something we should have addressed a long time ago, so regardless of trends. And, you know, the point is that we have a request before us to act, and I would hope that we can do that. And let's all work together to make sure we've got the resources to be able to do that. Representative Johnson, and then we'll move the latest over and move on to the next bill. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Hewitt, thank you for bringing this forward. I understand the need. I've seen where the ambulance and EMTs and the paramedics have been wearing vests for 18 to 20 years now, especially in the Minneapolis area and St. Paul area. The tough part is with the ambulances, especially in my area, is they are wearing them. They don't really need them up here. But if they do a transport down to North or anywhere in the metro area, they might be down there 6 to 8 hours answering calls before we get our ambulance back up in our community. So it's a little frustrating for us because we go unserved for ambulance service and our EMTs and our emergency medical. So our fire departments are spent more time running medicals, which they've never done before because we've had the ambulance service that was locally based until the hospital system was taken over. But what I get into here is Representative Grossel brought it up, is the funding. We do not have enough. Generally, we run out of funding just for the law enforcement officers by that second year of the biennium, that the officers don't qualify or don't receive that funding because the fund is empty. And now we have a possibility more than doubling the size of it, those that would be eligible for this. So that is a huge issue. Now, we spend right now roughly $94,000 a month in this program. And that's with just over 10,000 officers. We're down about 1,200 officers in the state since last year. If we're going to add another 9 to 12,000 more people, we're going to have to more than double the size of that fund. Because I do want them safe, but it's a fiscal responsibility if we're going to do these grants. Jim should be able to get the grant, but his brother James was a month later and the fund is empty and he can't. Now he's got to spend the whole amount. If we're going to do this, we should make sure that it's fully funded. What that number is going to be, I don't know. But it is unfortunate that the way the crime has got out of control in the metro area, that they have to start wearing vests. It's a black mark on the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the surrounding communities when crime has gotten to the point where our ambulance and fire departments have to wear vests to be safe to go save somebody. It's just disappointing. So I hope, Representative Veal, you'll look at figure out some funding for this. Because like I said, just the law enforcement officers alone, it usually runs out of funds. So with that, let us move forward.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. And I am open to all sorts of ideas on how to do this. If we need to create a new fund, this chair is certainly open to doing that. We're going to need the help of all our members to be able to put the appropriate pressures on our respective political caucuses and leaders to make that happen. And so hopefully we can do that together. Representative Hewitt, we're going to close out here. I really want to thank you for bringing this forward. I kind of knew that, you know, the bringing it forward, you know, it would be hard for some to resist, you know, throwing in, you know, their own interpretation of what's going on. You know, all I'm hearing from the professionals here is that this would be very helpful for them. And we can certainly spend a whole lot of time talking about what the root cause. That's the purpose of many other bills and conversations here. I would hope that our posturing around that issue doesn't get in the way of us moving forward. And by the way, members, you know, Minneapolis sends its emergency responders and other folks out into greater Minnesota as well. It's one of the powerful things about our state is that Minnesotans are always there for one another. And so that's a two-way role, you know, when communities are responding to the needs that each community, if I may just close real quick. And that we share our resources with one another. So, Representative Hewitt, yes, let's do that.
And I'm sorry. We're going to move real quick. Forward. And I just want to reiterate what you said. This is not a Metro-centric bill. Metro is getting reimbursement from their companies. This was a big request by Outstate, and they have problems Outstate too for many reasons, but this is a statewide request. And last, I'd like to thank the testifiers that took time out of their day to come and to testify. And I'm going to leave you with a Mr. Rogers statement. Look at the helpers. Watch the helpers. Let's help the helpers. Okay? You probably said it differently, but you get my drift here. All right. Thank you.
Good advice, Representative Hewitt. It's always good to listen to Mr. Rogers. That's for sure. With that, the chair will lay over House File 2867. And we did not make any, 2867. Just making sure that we didn't do any amendments. We did not. And so this House File 2867 is laid over. And then finally, we have Representative Representative Backer, House File 2821. Representative Frazier, I'm just going to keep leaning on you, man. If you would be so kind as to move House File 2821 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, then we can get into this bill. The intent here will be to also lay this bill over. Representative Frazier.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Representative Backer, the motion is before us. 2-year bill, and I think you also have an author's amendment that you're going to be bringing
in? Chair and members, if I like, I would like us to add the A1 amendment to put the bill in order. I would appreciate that if one of the members would make that motion.
Very well. Representative Hewlett, I think it might be appropriate for you to make this motion.
Well,
Mr. Chair, I am more than happy to make the motion to accept the amendment.
Am I understanding, Representative, you and Representative Backer have been in communication on this bill, so I just wanted to be able to honor connection that you all
have. Not only, yes, Representative Backer and his army of people he's had contact with, so yes.
Very well. This bill puts this amendment will put the bill in the shape the author wishes to have. Representative Johnson, I think a voice vote should suffice here.
That'll be fine.
Very well. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House Bill 2821 is amended before us. Representative Backer, to your bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair, members. I have volunteered as an EMT for our ambulances here in Browns Valley, Minnesota for 27 years. I still volunteer, still take call time, a lot of call time. And we've always known that the armor system does allow us to communicate with other agencies, which is a great thing. This summer, it came even to a higher threshold. In Clinton, Minnesota, which is in Big Stone County, they had an elevator fire, a grain elevator fire. And those are big fires, okay? There's a lot of fuel. And that fire, and that's what happens in Minnesotans have a great tradition of helping others out. We had in Clinton 19 agencies there. We had the Browns Valley Fire Department there. We had the Clinton First Responders, which I served with both of them as an EMT, was there to help them. But one of the reasons they were successful, and this came from the fire chief of Clinton and Ortonville, and those are probably the two leads on this fire, was that they were able to communicate with other agencies. And that is so important. In law enforcement, in EMS, or in fire, communication save lives. Not just the people that are asking for help, but us who are out there running to that danger and so forth. And the armor system is roughly, depending where you're at, you can have radios that are 3-4 years old to a lot in greater Minnesota that are 15 year olds or plus, which we can't even get parts for. And so that is why this bill is moving forward for us to update those radios. There's a tremendous need for that because obviously when anybody's traveling in Minnesota and if they need 911 care, they want to make sure that us EMS and law enforcement and fire are able to provide the best care. Training's important, but lack of communication, that infrastructure is so important also. So that's why I've been carrying this bill, practical experience, plus the around the state support that I've received asking me to carry this. The amendment, basically, I've worked very closely with the agency. They had quite a few good suggestions on technical changes, how to implement the program and who gets it first. So that's really what the amendments did. But what I'll do, Chair, is I'll turn it over to our testifiers and then I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Let's move immediately to testifiers. First we have Donna Grainier. Please correct my pronunciation of your last name. Big Stone County Emergency Management Director. If you can come forward, state your name for the record. Give us your testimony, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Donna Greiner. I'm the Stevens County and Big Stone County Emergency Management Director. I also serve as the local armor system administrator for the Stevens County Sheriff. On July 25th, like Jeff shared or mentioned, it was a Sunday morning. There was a 911 call made to Big Stone County and the caller reported smoke coming from a large elevator. It was a grain elevator in the city of Clinton. There were many homes surrounding that elevator. So right away, there was a lot of concern. We also worry about explosion when it's an elevator. So we had a lot to worry about that morning. As Jeff mentioned, the Clinton Fire Chief, who served as the incident commander at the scene, immediately knew that this was an incident that would require additional resources. After the two-day battle to control the fire, there were 19 different fire departments, as he mentioned, who responded to the scene. They were able to communicate through the armor radio system. During and after action review with these departments, it was noted that the 19 departments were all in need of replacements of their radio systems. And then after checking this out throughout the state of Minnesota, checking with other emergency managers, it's throughout the state in all of our counties that need is there. During the recovery process, many meetings were held. Governor Walz, Congresswoman Fischbach, Senator Westrum, and Representative Backer all visited the location and took the time to visit with some of the emergency responders. During a visit, one of the fire chiefs shared his deep concern of the inability, the inability to fund the replacement of his fire department radios. Like Jeff mentioned, some of those radios do date back before even 2008. Each radio can cost between $2,400 to $6,000 each. And the estimated cost replacement to Big Stone County itself over the next 2-3 years is $1 million. Estimated cost to replace the radios in Stevens County over the next 2 to 3 years is $600,000. That's a huge expense for our small counties. Big Stone County, the population is less than 5,000 right now. We did also provide some letters of support and some resolutions, which you've received many emails, I'm sure. But in some of those emails and documents, it does countywide, statewide, Stearns County itself, they're looking at replacing 993 radios that have outdated. Morrison County, 250. Grant County, up to 319. Lacqua-Parle, up to 150. Big Stone County, the 230 radios. Stevens County, 200. I appreciate this time and the opportunity to share this information. If you have any questions, I'm available for those questions. And many of these departments, it's good to remember that they're volunteer and they do not have those budgets available. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate this opportunity to represent our emergency services departments.
Thank you, Ms. Greiner. I have to say I'm a little stunned by the thought that we've got old equipment that is so critically needed for something as important as this. And my hat's off to your community and to your neighbors for working together and working together at such a dangerous to put out such a dangerous blaze. And it seems appropriate to me as chair that our state should be partnering with your locals to make sure you have the best equipment possible. With that, members, we're going to move to Rebecca Youngs, Stevens County Administrator. Ms. Young, if you can come forward, state your name for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for taking the time to hear our testimony on House File 2821. I am Rebecca Young, Stevens County Administrator. I work with Donna, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Stevens County Board of Commissioners. We respectfully request your funding for the Armor Radio System grants in this bill, and we recognize that this is a large amount, but the need is really statewide. These are vital funds and needed and necessary to support critical infrastructure of public safety throughout the state of Minnesota. One of the biggest tasks our local governments face every day is public safety and emergency response, and radios are foundational to that and facilitating our response. Stevens County received a large grant just over 10 years ago, and since that time, we have steadily worked to try and replace failing and aging radios. Even with that conscious and focused work, we still have over 70% of our radios countywide that need replacing with no clear funding source. And I just a side note here, Donna's done an excellent job of chasing grants, replacing things, and not every county has that really, really good advocate that she's done. The Armor Radio System and its current requirements are a mandate of the state, and such really equate to an unfunded mandate. For local government units, this equates to a direct impact to local taxpayers, as there are no clear sources of revenue to purchase and update radios. For our partners in the community, many have no funding source other than fundraising. Oftentimes, the county serves as a fail-safe for those agencies, purchasing radios, applying for grants, coordinating disbursement of this equipment to rural fire, rescue, and ambulance groups. Without the counties facilitating this, and specifically in Stevens County, many of these rural organizations do not have a way to update their radios. The bill calls for grants to local government units, and this is a very effective means to get the radios into hands of agencies that need them. Local government units can help set up, track, and maintain these radios. It's critical to secure funding for these partners to maintain and keep pace with current requirements for effective interagency communication. We're asking for the monies to cover the state mandated armor radios that are currently not funded. We're asking for funds to keep public safety response robust, and we're asking to ensure that all agencies can effectively communicate in all emergency situations. Without this funding, we recognize too many agencies will fall behind and not be able to keep pace in endangering a critical response from emergency responders. When Donna was giving the statistics, you heard that Stevens County had far less. They had only about 600,000. We're very fortunate. We've had some commissioners here, along with the grants that Donna's gotten. They've put some money into this resource, but even with their conscious effort towards budgeting some funds and some replacement, we just can't keep pace with the aging and the mandates and the new encryption standards. So we're very fortunate that you were able to hear this bill today, and we're available for any questions that you may have, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Young, and thank you for quickly getting through that very important testimony. I just want to acknowledge the work that the locals are doing to be able to get the resources locally to make this happen. Hopefully we can play a role at the state with that. Representative Backer, we still have Mr. Schmidt, and so I'm going to call on him to come forward, give us his name and his testimony, and then we'll move to the remaining minutes to a conversation before we lay this over. Mr. Schmidt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and members of the committee. I'm Steve Schmidt. I'm a Meeker County Commissioner. I'm the Vice Chair of the Association of Minnesota Counties Public Safety Policy Committee. My further involvement with this armor radios involves I'm the Vice Chair of Central Minnesota Emergency Services Board. I'm the Emergency Management Director for the City of Eden Valley. I am the Safety Officer for the Eden Valley Fire Department, and I am the Training Officer for Eden Valley Rescue Squad. AMC strongly supports House File 2821, which provides funding to replace armor radios throughout the state of Minnesota. Minnesota's emergency preparedness system has been funded primarily by inconsistent federal sources. Supportive and effective state funds are an immediate need for the critical functions of emergency services related to armor radios or allied radio matrix for emergency response. A 911 telecommunications service fee can be utilized for costs related to the 911 system. However, federal rules do not allow these funds to be used for armor maintenance or equipment outside of the dispatch center, which our current deficiencies are lying outside of these parameters. Thousands of radios, and I believe from our committee was 45,000 to be exact, in that neighborhood in Minnesota are outdated and in need of replacement and can cost upwards of $5,000 each. Further critical support systems such as the repeaters on the towers have also not kept pace with ever advancing technology. The extreme shortage of public safety personnel coupled with lacking communication system is placing an additional strain on an already overburdened emergency response sector for our local governments. The armor system is critical to support the work of law enforcement, emergency management, firefighters, EMS, and other safety, public safety officials, including ambulance services and our LifeLink helicopters. Thank you to Representative Backer for authoring this bill and Chair Mariani for hearing it in this committee. Replacing armor radios will help keep Minnesota communities safe, and we ask committee to support this bill. I stand for questions, and I also have Carly Stark from AMC on if there's anything further.
Thank you, Commissioner Schmidt. Let's move quickly, Representative Hewitt.
Yes, Chair Mariani, and basically it's a statement to say that this does not just involve the outstate area, this involves the whole state. As all of you travel throughout the state, this is so important and key. As if we did have to respond for a mutual aid call to that elevator situation. This service should put us all on the same network, the same channel, and it's sick to hear that we're still fighting this battle. This is another one of those things that should have been taken 10 years ago, and money should have been appropriated to make sure this is up to date. So here we are again in a situation where we're going to have to take care of a problem that needs help now. I encourage members to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Backer, thank you for bringing this forward. This is a huge issue, especially in greater Minnesota. Communication has always been an issue, but it's never been an issue in greater Minnesota. We were able to communicate with each other, no problems. For those of you who aren't old enough to remember, this armor system came out of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. Because the city of New York had, everything was in silos. Fire department never communicated with law enforcement, never communicated with EMS. They're all independently and all independently run. For those of us in greater Minnesota, we didn't do that. We worked with each other. We had good communications, not just in our counties and our cities, but our surrounding communities as well. But unfortunately, the federal government forced this armor system type 800 system onto us, and now we're stuck with it, and they are not paying for it. There's some of these radios now are 18 to 20 years old and no longer can be updated. In fact, one of my fire departments bought 14 portable radios at a time with the grant money, but by the time the system was up and running, they could not be updated to be used. They were boat anchors. They were no longer functional, and they'd never been used. Unlike the radios we had before, our fire department had mobile radios that were 35 years old and still working just fine. Now we got to get about 10 to 12 years on on new electronic systems because of updates that are required multiple times a year at, just in my county, $15,000 to $20,000 to do the updates every couple months. It gets very expensive. But now we're at a point where those radios can no longer be updated. The federal government have put in new standards for encryption because of the sensitive data and personal data being used over those radios. So now that a lot of them aren't able to get that encryption, so they have to be replaced under federal law, federal guideline, or not law, but guidelines by the FBI. So this is important. I do have concerns where the money is coming from. I wonder if Representative Backer would have an idea, because he has the money coming from the one of the federal programs that sent money to the state of Minnesota. If this doesn't qualify, Representative Baker, for those funding, what is your plan to get the funds to cover this? Because it is important, and we need to make sure that we get these radios fixed and replaced as soon as possible.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, Chair and Representative Johnson, good question. If I do believe it would, because this is falls in my opinion, but let's say if it doesn't, then we would work with the general fund. I know the 911 fund has a lot of money in there. I'm not 100% against of using some of that money, but one of the things Representative Holt talked about, and I agree with them, we have not reinvested into radios every year. I really think we need to use the 911 funds as every year, we invest maybe $50 million every year or $25 million every year or to replace radios, whatever that might be. I've had some, since the bill's been dropped, I've had those discussions. So that's plan B. We work with the general fund and maybe some of the 911 fund. So good question. Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Representative Johnson?
It's an issue that we do have to deal with. And I think we should start setting up. If we get everybody updated right away, we have time to figure out how to do maintenance down the road. But we can't forget about it this time. I do also have another bill dealing with this issue that does use the funds out of the 911 account. But at this But whatever, however, we do have to get some funding to them to figure this out, because it is an important issue.
Very well. We should probably visit on your bill as well then, Representative Johnson. Representative Bakker, why don't you close us out here? Good bill, tough issue. I'm kind of reminded of the old commercial, you know, pay me now or pay me later. And someone should have been listening to that some years back. And so it's an important need to do some catching up as well as putting into a play what you just talked about, which is a way to make sure that we don't fall behind again. But why don't you close this out, and then we'll move to the lay bill over, sir.
Yes, again, thank you, Chair, for hearing this bill. If you and I have talked, you understand the importance of that. And this is something I see that we want to get started sooner than later. Like a good friend of mine that's on the call, we want to get the rigs out of the garage. But once we get the rigs out of the garage, we want to be able to communicate. And as an EMT for 27 years, I have been on scenes that I have needed to communicate with fire and law enforcement and even public works and so forth. And as a volunteer, reason I volunteer is to serve, to help others. But we have to be able to keep our folks who run to danger, we got to keep them safe. So again, I appreciate everybody's time on this very important issue. And thank you and have a good day, everybody.
Thank you, Representative Bakker. I want to thank your testifiers for being with us here today, but also for the work that they do for their counties and in this area.
Agreed.
Very well. With that, the chair lays over House File 2821 as amended for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Members, just a quick reminder of what I said earlier, that we will be doing an extended hearing date on March 8th. So giving you all some time to plan for that. It looks like we're looking at 6 p.m. on that day. We do regularly meet that day, so we will have our meeting at 1 p.m. that day, and then we'll do an evening meeting at 6 p.m. So with that, members, we will come back together on Thursday. And until such time, break out your shovels and hopefully you all have some good boots and scarves and coats that you can use over the course of the next 48 hours. Until then, this committee stands adjourned.